What did you do after you quit working in real estate?
I'm not sure just what year it was. I went up to apply at the VA. I couldn't get in until Eisenhower was the president. Just as soon as he was the president, I applied, I got in right away. And then when Kennedy was running, why, of course, some of them knew that I had signed up for Republicans, because I've always been a Republican. And one of the guys came in and said, Bowman, if you don't vote for Kennedy, you're going to lose your job. I said, okay, if I want to vote for Kennedy, I will, but nobody's going to make me vote for him. I said, I don't go for that way of doing. So I go out and I get a Nixon ticket sticker and a Hoffman sticker on the same sticker. I stuck it on the back of my car and I drove out into the VA grounds and I parked the car. Here comes the same guy who's telling me I'm going to lose my job. He says, how come you did that, Bowman? I said, because I want to, and I says, I have a right to. He says, you know, this is federal. I says, I don't care if it's federal or if it belongs to the King of England. I says, I'd do it if I want to, and I showed you I did. And I said, don't you take the stickers off of my car. I said, if I want to go to the polls, vote for either one or somebody else, I'll do it. But I says, I don't have to tell you, but I says, I don't need that sticker on my car. I left it on my car. But I did get that out in a way. But they did keep me on until Kennedy got in.
What kind of work did you do there?
I worked in the kitchens, in what they call a ward kitchen. We prepared the meals and put them on the trays, and then the nurses and aides would come to the door and take it to the patients. And then the hot cots would bring up the hot food or anything like that. And another thing they used to do there that I objected the very first day I was there, they had us push our hot pot out in the TB wards. And I can't understand those things. It's the one that we all had and got TB. We wore gowns and they wore those little things over your mouth, you know, what you call it. But the aides and the nurses would come to the hot pot and they'd take the trays to the sick people. Then they'd bring the trays back after the people would eat what they wanted to eat. Then we need to push the hot pot back into the wards. And if there's any boiled eggs left, we used to put them in hot water and kind of reboil them again. And if there's any of those little, I guess you call it about a half a pint of milk, they said if the lid didn't show that it had been opened, to wash that off and send that all back to the kitchen with the hot card. Well, finally, somebody told me one time they found cigarette butts in one of those little things. Another time, they said they saw some guy urinate in it, and he pressed it real tight and sent it back to the kitchen. And what else was there? Something else was found in it. So I'd bring that up in our meeting. Well, the head lady, she almost shut me up. She said, we have a right to do that from Washington, D.C. Well, now, the VA out here at Long Beach proved that they were running the VA hospital cheaper than any other hospital over the whole country. By doing things like that. That was some of the things they done. Well, I don't know. Because I talk too much. Well, they haven't slapped me, but I am one of those that come out and say what I have to say. So just before I left them, they decided then to not to send the milk back down to the kitchen, and I don't think they're supposed to send the eggs back. Those trays are paid for by the taxpayers. I brought that up, you know, and I knew that. I said, the taxpayers pays for those trays, and why don't you throw all that stuff away when it comes off from the sick people, from the sick bed? Now, that's one thing that I can't understand why that they permit things like that. But the head ones knows it. The big shots from Washington, D.C. knows those things. And they let it go. I also wonder if we all hadn't got TB and everything else. And they used to have so many cockroaches. And at night, when we'd send the wells down, we'd wash the wells that didn't have anything in, you know, send them back clean. Well, at night, the cockroaches would run all over those wells, and they were not clean the next morning when the food was put in there. Well, I'm surprised we all didn't get hepatitis and stuff like that. Oh, boy.
How long, you said it took you a while to get on there. How long did you apply before you got the job?
Well, I couldn't get in under anybody until Eisenhower was president. He was president.
Why was that?
Because he was a Republican.
No, I know. Okay. But they knew on your application that you were a Republican?
Well, I'm not sure whether I put that down or not. I can't remember, but anyway, I couldn't get in as long as but just as soon as Eisenhower got in, I was called in to take the job. But I kind of always resented that, because why should you have to be a Democrat to get a job, or why do you have to not get a job if you're a Republican? I never could understand that. But I've had people to tell me they have signed up Democrats so they could get a job, because they know as well as I know that that is discrimination against you. And they can all say what they want to, but they do discriminate against you. But then I got so far I couldn't do the work, but they did everything they could. They piled it on to me to try to force me to quit.
How long did you work there?
From, I believe it was in August. '72 to '61, what would that be? Almost 9 years. And I got... 52 to 61. Almost 9 years. I remember the May the 24th, 1961, because my sister broke her leg that day. And when I come home, I got laid off that day, and I come home, the husband said, I lost my job today. Well, he said, you got another. And he said, you got to go up to the doctor's office and take your sister to the hospital. She broke her leg. So I remember that date, but I can't recall exactly the date. It must have been 52 when I went to work. And I worked all that time.
You worked in the kitchen the whole time?
Yeah, I was always. That was what I applied for. My sister had told me, she knew about it, she was a nurse, and she said that would be the best. To get the kitchen wouldn't be as hard as some of the other work. And I wasn't secretary or anything like that, and I couldn't work a secretary job. But where I made a mistake that I didn't take the housekeeping job, where I could stand on the handle, on the broom handle, and fiddle away my time. That's the way a lot of them did. But I was afraid to take that housekeeping job because you had to go in around the sick people, clean up their messes when they threw up and everything like that. And I didn't want that because I was afraid I'd get sick over that. So that is, I'd be thrown up worse than they would. So the cooking was the best for me. And I worked there all that time. So...
Will you tell me how you lost your job there? They said they laid you off?
Yes. Well, I had fallen on a step and hurt my hip. My leg went out that way, my other leg went out this way, and I was shot clear to the top of my head. But I was sent back on duty. But from that time on, my hip kept hurting me all the time. And they kept me on duty. They just thought, well, if they kept me long enough, I would quit. I had to push those carts. Well, there's something about like the carts at the store that they have the milk on and things that we at the noon hour would push back to the ward, you know, and then in the evening the girls would take it every night while I was left. And one day I was walking across the lot and I fell with the carts. A couple people run to me and they said, how come you have to push those? I said, well, they tell us we have to, so what else can I do? And I said, I'm not able to hardly push anything. And the longer I worked, the worse I got. And I'd go in at the hot table and pick up my tray. Somebody would have to come and help me take the tray over to the table where I ate my lunch. But we had to pay for one lunch or one meal. If I worked at night, I had to pay at night duty. But I never worked at night, so mine was always luncheon. But they always took out one meal a day. Out of work. We had to do that. So I always ate anyhow, because I always like hot meals anyhow.
And you couldn't bring your lunch in?
No, you wasn't supposed to. If you did, you had to pay anyhow. So they still took it out. So you still had to pay. And so the longer I went, the worse I got, the worse I got. So then on my vacation, I was taking 2 weeks off on vacation. I think I went back home that time. And the dietitian, she said, when you come back, don't come on duty. I didn't pay too much attention to her, so then when my 2 weeks was up, I went back, I signed in, and I was put on duty. Well, then in the afternoon, we had a meeting. We had meetings ever so often. So she calls me into her office. She says, Miss Bowman, I told you not to go to work. When you come back, she says, you weren't supposed to go back on duty anymore. I said, well, now, would you be kind enough to sign me a paper, dated, and put down the reason that I'm not supposed to go on duty? She said, well, sure. And she did that. Well, I had that to show that I was laid off from the VA hospital. Otherwise, I had nothing to show, and they would have marked me AOOL, and I would never got a penny. I didn't get too much of it at first. I got $25 a month, and that was a whole lot at first. It kept coming up later on in life, but at first, for several years, it was only $25, but that was better than nothing. So I heard afterwards that someone told me that they sure raised Cain with her for ever giving me that paper. Well, why shouldn't she give me a paper? How would I know? How could I prove I was laid off? Then there was a time I'd had to go uptown and fill out anything I could do. And I said, I couldn't even bend down to tie my shoes. I said, sometimes I can't even dress myself. I had all of that complaint to put on my record there. And I had that paper to show. Well, then it wasn't very long until they sent me whatever money they owed me, you know, from the time I'd worked, the rest of the time I had worked, and then to start out my disability. And they had taken me off of Social Security, or I'd have got a lot more. They put me on what the same thing as the postmaster get, or post office people get. I forget what they call it. But the majority of the people from the Valley came over there to work with the VA, and they resented us for being on Social Security because we get more. We got more. They take maybe more out of your paycheck, but we get more than they did. They had a meeting and the majority ruled. So then they made all of us who had Social Security take it off on the other, so we had to go on the other. But it's what they call civil service. So I'd get a check for civil service. But that check was only for 25 for months and months and years.
Now, did they lay you off because of your injury?
Well, they put it on there, on the paper, let's see, administrative disability. So that would be, I was laid off because of being disabled on that job. They didn't keep me from trying to get another job if I was able to do anything. So then when I go and fill out all these other forms to try to get something else, I couldn't work anyhow. So I fill them all out and put everything down. I said, there's times I can't even sleep. I can't bend over to tie my shoes. I can't even dress myself. Well, you have your hip out of place, what you're going to do? You can't do much. So I put down and I told the truth about it. So finally, it wasn't very long until I began to draw $25. And I would never got that. And another thing, we had signed up for insurance. I was signed up for $50,000 insurance. The insurance I took out. I took out the Aetna and the high option, and that was the best insurance that we had a right to. Now, some of them took this insurance that you had to go to these hospitals around here and their own doctors. Well, I flew back east almost every year, and I thought, well, if I get sick or something, I couldn't go to the doctors out here. So I happened to ask somebody which was the best, so they told me Aetna high option. Well, they tried to cut me down to low option. You wouldn't get so much. Yeah, I get maybe more on my paycheck, but I didn't get as much insurance. I kept the high option to this day because I didn't know when I had to go to the hospital. And it's so much better. Well, while Roy was still living, he got sick. Well, there was time in the year I could take him as half of that insurance. That way he'd get $25,000 insurance, and I got the $25,000. Well, he used a lot of his because he had cancer, and he was in and out of the hospital an awful lot. Well, he used a lot of his, but I've never used much of mine. Well, every year they cut me back. I don't get too much insurance, but then as long as they'll help with the Social Security, well, I'm all right then. But I'll keep that high option as long as I'm living. But every once in a while they'll say, don't I want to cut down to the lower option? Why should I? And it was so funny thing, the guy from the kitchen, he come in when I went in to sign for insurance. See, I didn't tell anybody what I was going to sign up. I thought nobody's business. They didn't tell me which is best. And I went out to an insurance person and asked them, and they said that was the best. So I didn't tell anybody. So then when I went in there, the head guy in the kitchen, he comes in when I went in there, and one of my supervisors was standing out at the door, and she was listening to see what I was signing up. Well, I didn't care if they wanted to know that bad. I could have told them, but I wasn't going to, so I'd let them find out some other way. So when I signed up, the guy says, Bowman, you're either a smart woman or else you've talked to somebody. I said, well, I talked to a lot of people. I said, I talked to you and a lot of people. I said, why? What makes you think I'm smart? He said, you signed up for the best. Well, I said, why didn't they tell me it was the best before I signed up? Why didn't they tell me which was the best? I said, some of them knew, but I said, they never told me anything. Well, he said, they should tell them what they should do, but they didn't do it. Well, I fooled them on that. So anyway, I come out ahead on that. But I'm so thankful I did that a lot of people... They'd come to me and say, Bowman, you all signed up for whatever it was here. I can't think of the name of it, but anyway, they wanted to have a hospital here, you know, the doctors here. I said, well, I haven't made up my mind yet. That's what I'd tell them. I didn't have to tell them where I went and talked to. I had a right to talk to anybody I want to. that I found out, and thank goodness I did, because I really had very much insurance at all if I hadn't. And that has helped me a lot, and it helped my husband a lot. So they still take out insurance out of my paycheck, yes, but I still get a raise on my Social Security and my civil service. But civil service pays for that insurance, and the Medicare goes out of the Social Security. So I'm making more right now than I ever have. I've got more check coming in than I ever have before. Now, there for a while, I was able to take a widow's deduction, a widow's pension. And at that time, I got $25 from my husband after he passed away. I signed up for that right away because I wasn't getting only the $25, I think it was, from the civil service. And Social Security wasn't paying too hot. Well, I signed up for the $25 for several months. Then they cut me out of that. They said I was making too much off of Social Security because they'd always know if Social Security paid more. So they cut me out of the widow's pension. They said if I ever got back to where it was before, then they would pay me again, but they probably never would.
Have you worked outside the home since your job
at the VA? No, I think that was the last. I was never able to work after that. But the more I went, the more crippled I got, and I couldn't do anything. And so I never tried to get another job. I just drew my pensions and went on and done the best I could. I had to take care of my husband for a while until he passed away in 64. And that was in 61 when I got laid off, so I was home with him for a while. But he had been operated on about 5 years before he passed away. He lost a lung with cancer. But my doctor said, he told me what to expect in my husband's sickness, you know. So I was prepared in a way, although you're never completely prepared when he passed away, but still it helped me to be told what to expect. And everything that went, it was wonderful to have my son tell me what. And my husband, I don't think ever knew that I thought he had cancer because I'd never told him. Well, no, my doctor, he said, well, don't tell Pop, but somebody had told him because the neighbor told me. They said, Roy, I never thought that you ever knew that he had cancer. I said, well, I didn't learn to know. So that way, it made it better.
Tell me about when you were clean for a day. What made you think about going on that show?
Well, my sisters had told me to try to get on. I went the third time to the show.
When was this now?
That was in 45, I think, when I first started. And I went to the Pan Pages Theater, I believe it was, to the first two shows. And then we went to the Moulin Rouge. Down, I think, Sunset Boulevard is where we were queen. And at first, it was radio. It wasn't TV. I never was on TV. It was radio. So then the third time, I was got a chance to be on. Well, the way Bailey used to do, he'd take his mic and he'd go around through the crowd and he'd say, what would you wish if you were queen for a day? What would you wish for? So he was going to go past me. I was sitting at the aisle, and he was going to go past me. I held out my hand. I said, say, Mr. Bailey, I said, my brother worked for Alka-Seltzer. Well, Alka-Seltzer was one of their sponsors. He whirls around on his heel. He said, just tell me where Alka-Seltzer is made. I said, Elkhart, Indiana. I thought he'd fall over. He thought I was a fool of him. And he said, well, what is your brother doing now? I said, he's an undertaker. He laughed. He said, say, if that isn't good, a guy working the first part of his life to prepare for the last part of his life. He said, that's good. He said, where's your husband now? I said, oh, he's downtown staying, but I said, he don't care about the show. He said, we don't want the old goat anyhow. Now, that was the words he used. And then he says, who's with me? And I said, well, my daughter, she's a cadet nurse. He said, that's good. And then he first asked me, what was my wish? And I said, well, I'd like to make a trip. So he studied for a while. And he said, would you change that wish? After I had answered the other questions and I suited him, he said, would I change that wish? I said, well, I don't care what you do with me and where you take me. Oh, he said, lady, you might be sorry for saying that. I said, no, I'm never sorry for anything. So then when he finished up asking any questions you want to do, he said, get up there before I change my mind. So I got up there and I was on number two chair. Well, when I got up there, oh, no, first he asked me if I knew how to milk a cow. I said, yes, you bring a cow on the stage, I'll show you how to milk a cow. I said, I can't milk a cow dry because I have a crippled finger. You've got to milk them dry when you're milking them or they'll go dry. And everything I answered him, it suited me. So then when I got up there, the first lady was interviewed. Well, then he come to me, And then he asked me the same questions about different things, you know, like I had told him. And he says, now, I want this guy to go up there and fix his things like that, and I want you to show this audience how to milk a cow. So Bud Ernst was his name, and, oh, he was a heavy-set guy, heavy, tall and heavy-set, his shoulders were very wide. So he does that. So I began to pull on his fingers. I said, this bossy don't give down her milk, and I thought those people would die. I didn't think how that sounded, but that's what they wanted me. They was wanting something to be funny, anyhow. And I said, this bossy don't give down her milk. Well, then that big guy laid down on the Russian, and he rolled, and he laughed, and Betty laughed, and he laughed. Everybody was laughing. Mary Eileen was there. She said, Mom, I was sitting on one side of the chair. She was smoking cigarettes. I said, I was biting on my cigarette. She said, everybody was screaming their head off to what I said. So then Betty comes over with the mic again. He says, say that again. Well, I got to laughing at this guy laying on the Russian, but I couldn't repeat it. But I often wished I had it, but I couldn't repeat it. So then Betty, he said, get up here and get that. No, no. They had four or five judges, and all the judges voted for them. Well, I heard after that we had a doctor, woman doctor, on the program. She was kind of halfway sore because she didn't win it. But the reason I won it, because I kept that crowd laughing like they did. Now, that was the only reason I got it, and two of what I said.
What was your wish?
Well, the only wish I got, I said, just anywhere they'd take me or whatever they would do for me. Because my wish was to go back home and see my mother, because I lived out here from 42 to 46, and I hadn't been home to see her. She had diabetes, and we didn't know how long she was going to live. And that was my first wish. Well, I had to change it. A long time after that, I got on the program. Then I learned why that I wasn't given the trip, because if any sponsor had sponsored a trip that day, I would have gotten it. Now, when he went around, and anybody... Any sponsors that said that they'd give a refrigerator today, and anybody, the first person to say they'd want a refrigerator, they got on. But everybody didn't know those things until after we were queens, you see, which was all right. But they have to be sure that they could give you what you'd asked for. So I didn't know what else to say. I said, I didn't care what you done to me or where you take me. So he made that remark. He said, well, you may be sorry for making a remark like that or saying that. So then when the judges voted, they all voted, and I was number two. So they hollered, number two, number two, number two, number two, all five of them. Well, then here they come to throw the robe around me and put the crown on my head. And he comes over and he crowns me, clean for a day. Oh, I never so thrilled in all my, that was one of the thrills of my life. I've had two, three other thrills, but that was a thrill in my life, and I never dreamed that I would get to be queen. Well, then the escort then took me to, I believe it was Max Factor's. They first laid me up, my hair and my face and everything, fingernails and everything, and they gave me about $50 worth of makeup stuff at that time. And then I think they took us out to the Paramount Theater, and I got to meet Bill Elliott. Do you ever remember Bill Elliott? He was Red Ryder. Bill Elliott. I met him, and I met the one that used to be a plumber. What was her name? Jane Withers, whichever it was. I got to go to her dressing room, talk to her quite a while, and Bill gave me a kiss, but I never got the picture, and I always wanted the picture, but they took the picture. I didn't think about him kissing me, but they do that, you know, on the program that way. So then, after we went through Paramount Studios, I wished after that I'd asked to try to get a chance to be an inspector or something on the on movies, you know. And then we went to the hospital, and my escort left me. Then he came back and picked me up. And my daughter went around. So one of the girls had a pretty dress, the dress that you see on that picture. And I borrowed that dress to wear that night. And then... I borrowed my daughter's roommate coat, so to have something different to wear, because the dress I had on wasn't so nice for a nightclub, you know. So then the escort comes to set my daughter and me, and he took us back to the Moulin Rouge. And they gave us a lot of pictures. There must be in some of the other boxes or something, a lot of these movie girls, these girls that worked at the Moulin Rouge. And then we got eat anything we wanted to eat. And then they danced. Well, I couldn't dance, so I told my husband, I said, dance with my daughter. I said, I don't know how to dance, so I let her dance, and she dances all right, but I never learned to dance. So then we went to Cyril's after that, but I did my first, you know, and it was midnight before we got through at Cyril's. Well, then we stopped and got a hamburger on the way home, and he said he felt bad, but he said he wasn't going to get too much sleep because he'd have to go back on duty the next day. I said, how about staying all night at my house? And I said, then you take me uptown to get my unemployment check. It was a $20 check. And I said, then I'll go back with you. But a lot of times when you go back the next day, they sometimes would have you come back on the program, and if they had the time to tell of your experience and where you went and this, that, and the other. So we had him stay here all night, and I got up the next morning, I fixed his breakfast for him. And he took me uptown. Well, then I told him to take a bath here in the bathtub before we went up there. So he went up to get a shave, and I think a haircut. Anyway, got a shave while I went to the unemployment and got my unemployment check. That's all the money I had was my unemployment check, $20. Well, then he takes me back to Hollywood. Well, anyway, after the queen was chosen the next day, I can't recall who she was. I went out to try to get that. So I first asked them there at the studio if they'd cash that $20 check. They wouldn't cash it. I went over to the Down Derby. They wouldn't cash it. I went to one of the other restaurants. They wouldn't cash it. I hitchhiked home part of the way with one person, about halfway home, and then I hitched away the rest of the way, got up to Long Beach and went into Walker's, and I paid because Walker's knew me because I owed them on bills, you know. So they cashed my check. Then I jumped on the bus and come home on our city bus. And those two guys that had picked me up that I hitchhiked with, they said, their wives would never believe that they picked up the queen for a day. I said, well, you get the paper from Hollywood. And I said, my name will be in the paper. My picture will probably be there. And I said, you tell them that I was the queen on January 3rd, 1946. Well, they said they caught such a kick out of that, they could hardly believe it. Well, I said, it's true, but I said, why wouldn't these people cash my check? But they told me that there'd been too many checks that had been cashed that people had no right to cash, and they refused to cash them. Well, I said, why do we people are artists have to stand the blunt? Well, I couldn't get any money for anybody, so I just came home. That's when I get home. So I hitchhiked.
How did your family feel about you being the queen?
He didn't give a care much. He didn't care much at all. But what I did, I made a mistake. I called the neighbor down the street and told her to call my son. He was working at the hardware store up here, the liquor store, they sold medicine and everything, at the store up here. I should have called him instead of the neighbor, because they kind of resentful, you know, that I was queen. And I told her to tell my son to have the house straightened up, because it wasn't straightened up too good. She didn't tell him a word. And so the two boys, they slept in the two big beds. They had two big beds in the front bedroom. So I had him to sleep in one of the beds. And I told the boys, I said, you sleep in the other bed. After midnight, we got here. And I said, you get over. And I told him his name. I can't think it's on that paper. And I said, he's going to stay all night, and then I'm going back to Hollywood the next day. And then Marilyn and Eileen slept out here on the divan. It was an open-up bed. So the next morning, he gets up, and I told him to take a bath while I got breakfast. I had to run over to the neighbor and borrow some butter. I didn't have butter to make the toast, so I had ham and eggs, toast, coffee, and milk, and butter. That's what I fixed for him. Well, that was a surprise to anybody that I fixed him a meal, you know. Well, why not? That way he didn't have to go buy a meal, and he got back in plenty of time, and he got a little rest. Well, the funniest thing, the dog always slept on our bed. She never slept much with me, but she'd get at the foot of my husband. Now, he wasn't here at the time. He worked at Palm Springs at the time. But it wouldn't make any difference whether he was here or not. But the dog was at the foot of the bed. She gets up and she walks in the bedroom to see this guy. So I hollered at her. I said, now, Tiny, that was her name. I said, Tiny, he's all right now. I said, you come back to bed. She turned around, comes back to bed, and he couldn't get over that. He said, that dog knows people. I said, she knows when people are all right, but she knows when they're not all right. And I said, you